Welcome, everybody. This is How to English, Teach and Learn with Gavin M.
It's a podcast about teaching and learning English as a foreign language.
All opinions stated are personal and references will be given when necessary. Polyglot
is episode 17 of the fabulous Gav and Em's How to English Teach and Learn with Gav and Em. I'm Gav.
I'm Em.
And today is, as you said,
Polyglot Day.
Polyglot Day. Is that a national holiday?
No, I just made it up. Maybe we should have one. Maybe there already is one. Didn't check. But anyway, we're going to talk about polyglots, which I wasn't exactly sure what it was, Gav, before you mentioned it to me. So would you like to give us your dictionary definition of a polyglot?
I have not prepared a particular definition for us, but I'd say it's somebody who speaks several languages fairly fluently.
Yes, because that prefix poly, have you heard it anywhere else?
Poly... put the kettle on.
Okay, that's a children's rhyme. But, okay, you've got things like polymer.
Oh, polymer. That's like chains of molecules building things.
Right.
Like plastics and that.
Right, yeah. And then there's polygon.
Polygon.
Polygon to the market? No.
Is that like cauliflower? Is it a type of vegetable?
No. Polygon is a shape.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah, you've got rectangles, you've got squares, you've got octagons,
yes.
Polygons.
I never really got that because I thought octagon, like oct is eight, hexagon, I think had some root in six, but polygon, it was weird. But poly just means many. So many sides or many, many connections in the chain of plastic, whatever it was you said. So polyglot is many languages.
Lots of glots.
Lots of glots.
Mm.
Glots, I don't know. It's a lovely word, polyglot.
Kind of.
I like it. Can you think of what the adjective is? If you know many languages, you are...
polyglotmous?
Nearly. Polyglottic.
Whoa.
You're polyglottic.
Don't think I've ever heard that before, Em.
And the noun of this whole concept would be, like, we're talking about polyglots, the people, but the whole thing is...
polyglotian.
That's not good. That's strange. Polyglottism.
Oh, of course. Polyglottism. Polyglottism.
Repeat after me. Polyglottism.
Polyglottism.
Mm.
A topic I am not very familiar with, but fortunately, I have read an article and we have a really wonderful guest to walk us through the topic of polyglottism. Ism, M. And of course, with your help, because I think you also read an article. Is that right?
We both read an article. Yes. And
now we're experts.
Wow. Let's carry on, shall we?
Em, I've decided to turn the entire episode on its head. Is that okay?
Yes. In what way, Gav? Are we having to sit upside down or something?
No, but I've decided to do our special featured teacher first.
Oh, so it's time for
Teacher Teach Me, in which we ask a teacher or learner to share their tips with us on how to improve our English communication, speaking, listening, reading, writing, pronunciation, all of these things. And today we've been fortunate enough to be able to feature Andy from andys.everyday.english on Instagram and andys.everyday.english1 on TikTok, who prepares her students for the Cambridge exams and helps improve her students' communication skills. Now, she's going to share a tip on how to improve learning vocabulary. Before we listen, can you guess which method she might share, Em? How do students improve their vocabulary?
Watching TikTok.
Watching TikTok.
Is that not the right verb?
Yeah. You can watch TikTok.
Looking at TikTok.
You can look at TikTok. You can listen to TikTok. Sometimes there's audio.
Right.
Not only music.
I don't know. That's not exactly learning vocabulary in the traditional way, is it? I'm trying to think of something. Is it like a standard method that I would have come across?
I'm sure that you have also suggested this method to your students. Come on, Em. Where do you see a lot of vocabulary? Where can your students find lots of words together that they can put into their vocabulary books, etc.? Em, come on, what comes to mind? Give us some ideas. What do you say to your students in the middle of the lesson? Your students saying, Em, I get a bit stuck. There are so many words in English, so many phrases, and I don't know where to go to find more. What can I do, Em? Teacher Em. TikTok?
Well, I think just mobile phones. Just go online. Twitter, YouTube. Get into a chat room. See what people are talking about. What words come up a lot?
That's a great idea. And then when you see words you don't know, write them down. Maybe translate them if you have to, if you can't guess from context. Em, these are great suggestions for your students and for the students who are listening to the show right now. Follow Em's tips. Go onto your socials, start scrolling, have a look at some conversations, maybe even take part in some of these convos.
I agree. But you don't have to. You can just passively take it in and then when you're confident enough, try and take part.
That's it. And TikTok.
And TikTok.
Now, let's listen to Andy's tip on improving your vocabulary. Here we go.
Hi there. I'm Andy. I'm a journalist and also a certified ESL teacher. For the last 13 years, I've been helping students worldwide to reach their academic English goals, specifically preparing students for the Cambridge exams B2, C1, adults and teens, as well as coaching busy adults improve their speaking skills for their working environment and efficient communication. You can find me on Instagram as andys.everyday.english and recently on TikTok as andys.everyday.english1. Let's learn something new today. Don't memorize vocabulary lists. Improve your reading skills instead. All students face this dilemma. Should I learn a vocabulary list? The answer is no. Try reading a variety of topics to gain vocabulary in context instead. Content through vocabulary lists will be easily forgotten, while content through interactive reading will be retained for longer. Simply because through interactive reading, you blend two strategies called top-down strategies and bottom-up strategies. The first, top-down strategies, is where you guess the meaning from context, you preview and predict what passage or excerpt will be about, you utilize a wide range of background experience, context, and information you have gained from real-life situations. Also, from bottom-up strategies, you can pay attention to smaller pieces of the text. You can break down words and codes, meaning that you're going to be able to understand from the context, the vocabulary in the text. Now, let me tell you how to do it. First, choose an article or a piece of writing you're interested in. Then, give a first read to gather an overall idea of the whole piece. You should skim the text and start highlighting the expressions or words that are new to you or not quite clear. Listen up, and here's the game changer. Before looking the words up, activate your critical thinking by trying to deduce the new vocabulary from the context and then confirm it going to the dictionary. This is called contextualizing. Learning to contextualize the material is usually beneficial for you in the way that you can get to understand and therefore process information more effectively as you read. If you got it right, celebrate your win. But if you got it wrong, try to understand if you found a false friend, if you misunderstood the context, if you mixed up a phrasal verb or collocation so you can fix this misinterpretation. Last but not least, don't forget that the acquisition of vocabulary comes from an indirect exposure to words at home, at school, real life, by listening and talking, especially when reading. So remember, the more you read, the better you'll be at it. Take care, and don't forget to vote for more.
Thank you, Andy. They were some fabulous tips. I really enjoyed that. Em, have you heard of top-down strategies and bottom-up strategies before?
I knew about them, but I didn't know they were called that.
I understood that top-down was to understand from context. So that's reading articles, that's TikTok, as you said, or maybe your Twitter feed, you're scrolling, you're reading. Whereas bottom up would be when you analyze some phrases, maybe a word or a couple of words together, maybe a whole sentence, but this is not in context. You're isolating the language. So that's a really good definition of the two different ways of learning words in and out of context.
And I liked that Andy was saying just these long lists of words, you don't retain them because they have no context, which I think we've always said.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think there is only one answer to all of these questions, because I think for some students, lists are fantastic. And even if it's a list on household items, you've got plant pot, you've got sofa, you've got armchair, you've got cabinet. Maybe that's not too bad. I agree, a massive list of like the 300 most used words in that language maybe isn't so useful because you've got no context there. But I think if they're grouped, maybe they're useful. And possibly with some pictures, because I love pictures. I learn quite well with pictures. So I'm not sure I 100% agree with Andy on that one.
Do what works, but I think most of my students would agree with Andy that lists are maybe a bit boring and not easy to remember. Coming back to Andy's big tip, read, read, read. I totally agree with that. Read something you're interested in and try and guess the words from the sentences. And I think this is something that my students struggle with, because they say, well, if I don't know, I don't know. How do I know what I don't know?
That's it. They freeze. They stop. They say, just what is it in my language?
Yeah, but I think you have to try and go slow with it and pick, maybe if you're teaching with this method, just pick words that you think are quite easy to guess from context, or that will boost that student's confidence to get it right. Because I think once they start doing it and getting it right, they will get bolder and it will get easier, because your brain does grow in that way. I think you improve with practice if you keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of the time there's a particularly difficult word and students just don't know it, and then they give up and say, well, I don't know what it means, so I'm not going to guess.
So to give a basic layout of this kind of lesson, we're imagining we walk into the classroom, say, hi class, last week I went to a wedding, I had a fabulous time, and I was talking to my friend and they told me about weddings in their country, and they're really different from weddings in my country. And so I've got a short paragraph all about this topic. Let's read it together and we can answer some questions to make sure that we understand the language in the paragraph.
And then maybe there's a word in there like, after the wedding everybody goes to the reception. And your student doesn't know what the word reception means.
Because I think reception, that's when you go to the hotel, you check in, hello, we've got 200 people, we want to check in please, there's a big long line of people.
Which would be fine, but a bit weird. So maybe you could have a conversation about that. So do you think it's going to be a hotel reception or something else? Well, what do you usually do after a wedding? You kind of have a big party together.
Yes. And why do we call it reception? Is it because we're receiving people?
Nice memory tip. Yeah.
That's it. So think about also, how can we remember these words?
Yeah.
Andy also mentioned false friends. Do you remember Leo mentioned false friends in episode 15, Em?
Yeah. That was great.
Because false friends can lead you in the wrong direction. You think, in my language it means this, so it must mean this in English, but no, that might not be the case. What episode was that, Em?
How to podcast.
Well remembered.
Good.
So before you look in your dictionary or translation app, as Andy mentions, try to guess the word from context. Celebrate your successful understanding or analyze your mistakes. And don't forget to add the word to your vocabulary book.
Nice.
As Andy says, reading, the more you do it, the better you'll be at it. Great tip. And we'll put Andy's links in our show notes, Em.
This ties in really well, Gav, to the article I read. It was an online article from fluentu.com all about polyglots. We will reference this article in the show notes if you want to read after. They say anyone can be a polyglot.
Anyone?
Anyone. Basically, the brain is plastic.
Well, yes.
What do you think that means? That we have plasticity in our...
Kind of flexible, malleable, can change and develop as necessary.
Exactly. We can make new connections every day. Our brain is not the same brain as it was last month. We grow, we learn. So it's a mental thing that they think they can't learn a language. Like, I can't run. I can't play a musical instrument. It's just a mindset. Mindsets are very important, Gav. You got to have the right mindset. Don't give up.
Positive approach to learning.
Yeah.
Never give up.
Yeah. Even when it gets a bit hard, you've got to keep going. A lot of the time, it's just this mindset, this attitude. Of course, it's a lot more than that. It's work you have to put in. But there are some very interesting facts from the article. It says that mainly a child will learn a language in what way, Gav? The first method of picking up a language as a child is...
Observation.
Before that, in the womb.
Oh, listening.
Yes, listening. They did this experiment where they got someone to read a book to the unborn child, and it was Cat in the Hat. And after the baby was born, it was about 4 years old, they asked the children what books they preferred, and they read a few different books. And all the children that were read Cat in the Hat while they were in the womb preferred that book.
That is extraordinary.
Whether that's just coincidence, I don't know, but it has a very distinctive style and rhythm and the sound of that book. And they surmised that this was because that child had been exposed to it before it was even born.
That's amazing. I hope that experiment has been peer reviewed and we can trust its authenticity.
Probably. But what we learn from this is listening is so important, and we can... take in so much even when we're not producing. We can just passively ingest this language.
Have you ever done that, Em? Have you passively ingested some language?
I do it all the time when I'm living abroad. I'm picking up bits and pieces from just living, basically, in the world.
That's amazing. So you don't have to actually attend lessons to absorb some new language. You're just simply walking down the street and you just... absorb the new words and language. Maybe you don't really understand it. Maybe it's just you're getting a gist of something, whether it's positive or negative, whether they're selling rainbows. Whether they're selling garden furniture, or it could be the latest.
What are you talking about? Okay, yes, Gav, yes, you pick it up. Whatever it is, you will pick it up. And yes, you might be wrong, but then you can ask someone and they'll tell you what it means, or you can look it up on the net. But anyway, learning a language definitely has been proven to help brain function. Studies have found that Alzheimer's has been diagnosed 4 years later in people that learn languages than people that only speak one language.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so there is something going on here. The article has 8 polyglots giving their tips and how they've managed to learn the languages they've learned. And I've just taken a few tips from what they've said. And some of them I'm quite interested to know what you think, Gav, because I'm not sure exactly if I agree with all of it, but there are some really interesting points.
This is interesting because we don't have to only focus on polyglots, but it's actually just learning languages. So it's the tips that we give our students. It's the tips that we keep in mind ourselves when we're learning a new language.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
So one of these polyglots says grammar rules are what fluent speakers use to describe what they already know.
Oh.
What do you think about that?
Not sure.
I'm not sure either.
I think grammar rules can be useful. I do find that when I do grammar with my students, they already know a lot of the grammar and they tend to get all the answers right. But I think it's useful for them just to return and solidify some of the rules, the knowledge that they already have.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is some benefit to learning some structure. That this polyglot was very much into prefabricated chunks. What do you think that is, Gav?
Is that building material?
In the language, what would that be? A prefabricated chunk.
I think that's a chunk of language like, I've worked here for 10 years. I've lived here for 2 months.
Yep.
I've done this for this long.
Can I have a latte?
Oh, can I have a?
Can I have a latte?
Can I have a cup of tea?
I'd like the mojito.
These are nice little chunks.
Yeah, and actually, this is quite nice. This polyglot really recommends phrase books. So, you know, like if you go on holiday and you buy a phrase book and it's just those chunks, really, like, excuse me, where's the toilet? That kind of language, just learn it. And each one of those is a little prefabricated chunk.
Okay, that can work in some languages, but not in others, because if you think of some of the romantic languages, you're going to have to change some of the verbs and the endings, for example.
Yeah.
You can't simply, as in English, just exchange the noun, like can I have a cup of tea with can I have a slice of cake.
Yeah.
Again, depends a bit on the language you're learning.
Does. But others recommend role plays, not grammar pages.
Nice. I love role plays.
Start acting it out.
And you don't realise how much your students love role plays until you do them. And then they suddenly put on voices and they're like really animated.
Yeah.
And you say, wow, where did that student come from? They were the quietest one in the room. And they're having so much fun pretending to be a police officer, stopping your car and saying, excuse me, sir, do you have your driving license?
Yeah, exactly. Because you do come out of that mode of thinking, you know, the book's in front of you, you're doing a gap fill. It's such a different mindset. Again, it's about mindset, that when you're doing a role play, it is real at that moment and you're having to produce the language as it's happening. You have to think fast.
And does it matter if the students make little mistakes?
Well, a lot of these polyglots say no. It's really just about speaking and making that leap to actually produce it.
Wow. So maybe the teacher can step in when there are some severe errors. Or if the student's partner doesn't understand what they're saying, then there has to be a moment where you say, okay, let's fix this little mistake, this little problem. What can we build here?
Yeah, I wouldn't step in as a teacher, though. I think if you're doing a role play, it is just like life. You have to just let it roll. And yeah, if it doesn't work, then you have to reflect afterwards. Like, why did that person not understand what you said? Oh, it may have been because you said this word wrong or you pronounced it strangely or whatever. So I think it's really important that that mindset doesn't suddenly flip back into the classroom and you're, yeah, back in the room.
That is a really good point. So teachers, don't step in when there's a role play, because this is the student's opportunity to practice the language. Even if there are mistakes, you can always at the end come back and say, okay, there were some little problems. How can we fix these?
Yeah, it's a really interesting method. You can try it different ways and see what works, because you could say it's bad to continue if it's not working. But yeah, you'll have to gauge it as a teacher. So lots of similar tips to Andy. Don't look at language out of context.
So that's top down. That's not bottom up.
Right. Okay. There were some nice tips like no mother tongue for 1 hour.
Whoa.
If you're with someone who can speak that language you're trying to learn, have a rule where you don't have any of your own language.
That's it. That's your study buddy. Hey, study buddy, let's spend an hour talking this target language.
And don't break the rules, whatever happens. Routine is a really big one. So just make the time, whatever you're doing, stop and have that time to learn your language. What about snippets, not buckets, Gav? What do you think that means?
Oh, a snippet's like a small piece of something. And a bucket would be a large volume of something.
Yes. So snippets, not buckets. Short but regular. Over time. So just little drips, drip, drip, drip.
That's a TikTok post here. That's a tweet there. That's a small paragraph from my favourite football team website or movie review.
Exactly. All quite fun. Two more things that I found really interesting. What do you think about this? The faster one learns a language, the faster one forgets. Don't learn in haste.
If I've got a final exam tomorrow and I haven't done any studying, I haven't got a choice, Em.
Are you going to remember all that stuff after the exam?
Probably.
A month later, a year later? Probably not. But I like this idea of haste. I think it doesn't matter maybe about speed, but the haste thing. Because remember, haste is when you do something rushed, when you're not relaxed and you're in a mindset where you're quite anxious or nervous. Whereas fast can be where you're in control and you know what you're doing and you're enjoying it and you like it. So I think this key word is haste. You're not going to retain it if you're stressed or if you're trying to do it because of a deadline or whatever.
So if you've read the page, that's not enough. You need to read and understand the page.
Exactly. For me, this is kind of half true. I think definitely don't learn in haste, but maybe fast is fine if that works for you. I kind of half agree with this.
Yeah. Well, what's fast for you is maybe slow for somebody else.
That's right. It's a very subjective word, isn't it? Fast. So some people say I learned this language in 3 months and some people say I learned it in 3 years. I still think that's quite fast.
That is fast.
3 decades is, for me, quite a comfortable time. And the last thing I thought was interesting is...
I'm not sure you'll be a polyglot in that case, then.
I don't know. You can be a polyglot at any age.
What, if it takes 30 years for each one?
Oh, well, yeah, okay.
How many you got under your belt already?
Medical science might need to improve before I get to the polyglot status. So the last one I thought was good is you can only learn from what you can comprehend.
Ah, that's, as I said, don't just read it, but read it and understand it.
Yeah, I think it's more from an actual level point of view, though. Obviously, as a beginner, you won't understand an advanced text. But I think there's some truth in this, that you have to be able to comprehend the majority of what you're looking at, reading, listening to, watching on TV. If it's all just a blur, you won't learn anything. So you have to get the right level. Don't expect, you know, as a beginner to watch Friends and be able to understand it all. But then I have students who've watched Friends many, many times. Can we say they're poly watchers? Maybe not. But anyway, they've watched it many, many times. And the first couple of times they've watched it with subtitles in their own language. And then they've gradually started to recognize some words, some phrases. And then after 9 or 10 times, they're actually able to watch it without the subtitles and get a bit more. So you can't just turn on a TV program with no language and understand it. You have to have some level of comprehension, I think. But just maybe judge what you're looking at, reading and watching, because you want to be leveling up, not stagnating.
I like that idea. You start with the subtitles in your language, you switch to the subtitles in the key language, and then eventually you've got no subtitles and you know it word for word.
And you've learnt a language just through television.
That's so cool. Em, I really enjoyed hearing your tips from, what was the article?
FluentU.com.
That's a nice one. I think this might be a good time to introduce Azren, the language nerd, who runs Calgary Language Nerds, a school that offers to teach over a dozen languages, including Danish, Cantonese, English, Gujarati, and Spanish. They offer tailored lessons and group events for language learners to provide support and confidence to their students. So you can check out their services at their website, on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, or you can search on the internet, Azren the Language Nerd. Azren, the language nerd.
Hello, everybody. My name is Azren. People online call me Azren, the language nerd. I run a language tutoring business called the Calgary Language Nerds, and I'm excited to be here today. Today, I'd like to share a piece of advice which is pretty important for me when I learn different languages. I personally speak 5 languages. English, French, Spanish, Mandarin, and Gujarati. And as I've learned these different languages, I've realized that there are, at least for me, 3 different keys when it comes to being successful as a language learner. So the first one is the most common sense of them all, but it's probably the least important, which is the methods that you use. There are many different ways that someone can go about learning a language. And when I speak with language learners, I get the impression that a significant percentage of them focus the vast majority of their attention on trying to find the best, or at least optimizing the methods that they're using to learn the language. And of course, that is important. Otherwise, I wouldn't even talk about it today. But it's the least important, I would say, key to success when it comes to language learning out of the three keys to success. So your methods matter, but you don't need to have a perfect method. Using adequate methods, okay methods, methods that work, but maybe they're not the best, you can get some pretty darn good results by doing that. You can progress a lot. So that's number one. Okay. Number two is how much time you dedicate toward learning the language. So for example, if you're learning English, you have to dedicate as much time as you can. Now, I'm often asked, how much time should I be dedicating? Is there a magic number? Of course, there isn't a magic number, but I will say that it's helpful to know some of the research behind how long it takes to learn another language as an adult. I'm going to send a couple of links that hopefully can be posted alongside this podcast episode that talk a little bit about how much time it takes to learn another language. So one of the links is the website for the Foreign Service Institute, and they're probably one of the most, what's the word I'm looking for? It probably has some of the cleanest data on how long it takes people to learn another language. Now, this is looking at how long it takes to learn foreign languages for a native English speaker as an adult, and it's going through a U.S. government program. So it's with their specific program, but it still gives some reasonably good estimates or number of hours of how long it tends to take to learn different languages. So that's one. The other one is something published by Cambridge University, and it doesn't quite talk so much about how long it takes to learn a language. It does a little bit, but the primary focus of this piece by Cambridge University are the factors which influence how long it takes to learn another language. And that's obviously very important. So when you start to look at how many hours it takes, what the punchline, at least for me, is that if someone is studying or practicing less than, I would say, 3 to 5 hours a week, they're going to progress very slowly. And the slow progress will be frustrating because you're not going to be moving forward at a rate that you feel proud of yourself, or that you even feel like you're making progress. So I usually tell people, in an ideal world, you want to find at least three hours a week at a bare minimum. Really, 3 to 5 is kind of that magic number. Of course, more than that is better too, assuming you're not burning yourself out. When it comes to how much time you dedicate, something that's worth mentioning, which is actually in that Cambridge piece that I mentioned, the Cambridge University piece, one thing they mentioned, which makes a lot of sense, is condensing your studies, meaning studying or practicing more intensively, generally leads to better results. So if you did 100 hours of study within a year, that would be approximately 2 hours of practice per week. Or if you did 100 hours within about 3 months, which would be approximately, doing some quick math, 8 hours a week, if I did that right, roughly, you would learn more within 3 months than you would in 1 year, even though you did 100 hours of study in both situations. So intensive studies, condensing your studies, generally is also a good idea. So the keys we've mentioned so far, number one is the methods that you use, although that is the least important, I would say. Number two is how much time you dedicate. And number three comes down to the mentality that you have when you're learning. The mentality you have when you're learning is very important. Let me tell you a quick story here. So I have sometimes been learning languages myself, and I'm putting in the time, but I'm not in a mental place where I feel like I need to learn the language. I'm putting in the time, but I'm not mentally fully committed. Maybe my mind is on something else. Maybe I don't really want to be studying. And when I'm practicing with that kind of a attitude, I find that my progress is a lot slower. But there have been other times where I'm a lot more motivated and I need to maybe learn the language because I'm traveling to a country or I need it for work purposes or whatever the case is. I actually need it. So I approach my studies with a lot more seriousness and then I learn a lot faster. So to recap, methods, the time you put in, and the mentality you have while learning, those are, in my perspective, three major keys to success when learning another language.
Thank you, Ezrin. Great tips there. We had methods, meaning it's not so important about how you do it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Don't obsess about the way you're learning.
There's such a range of methods. Just try as many as you like. If one fits you, fantastic. If it doesn't, move on. Maybe you want a combination of methods. Just keep moving forward.
Don't get preoccupied with the how. Get on with it, yeah? Time, I like it. Yeah, there's no magic number, but I thought that was interesting about the intensive is better than the over a longer period. 3 to 5 hours is optimal, I think. I agree with that. Something to keep in mind.
That's it. The more, the merrier. But don't forget, as Ezrin says, don't burn out. Just keep it at a level where you feel comfortable. You feel like you're pushing yourself just enough, but not too much.
Which then leads to the mentality thing, which I reckon is about mindset, the same as we discussed. You've got to be doing it in the right frame of mind, not stressed, not tired, not feeling pushed to do it. You have to enjoy it. And I like the example of, you know, going on holiday. You want to learn it and you probably will learn it more than, you know, I've got an exam tomorrow and I have to learn it. That's a very different mindset and it really affects the results.
That was a very good summary. Thanks, Em, and thank you, Ezrin. Yes, please go and check out his links in our show notes. Em, have you noticed that this episode we haven't done a quiz?
Yeah, not until you pointed it out, but yeah, it's been a quiz-free zone today.
Well,
until now.
I haven't got a quiz, but I have some interesting information. Ezrin mentioned a couple of websites. I found one, which was from state.gov/foreign-language-training, and they break down the number of hours or weeks that are necessary for an English speaker to become fluent in another language. So for example, there's category one languages, which are more similar to English, therefore they don't take quite so long. These include Danish, Italian, Romanian, Dutch, Norwegian, Spanish, French, Portuguese, and Swedish. And they all take 24 weeks except French, which takes 30.
I was quite surprised with some of those. I didn't realise that they were so similar to English.
I didn't know that either. And that is absolutely fascinating. Do you know how many class hours that is, Em?
I don't have a calculator in my head, no.
Approximately 600 to 750 class hours.
Ooh, that seems like a lot.
It does seem like a lot, but I think this is a really key point that Ezrin brought up, which is realistic goals.
Mm.
This is the mentality. This is the, am I going to put this number of hours into this project to get the returns that I need? If you say to a student, okay, you have to spend 600 to 750 hours with me.
They wouldn't even begin. I think, I don't know about this idea, Gav. I think you're putting this massive, almost like an obstacle in front of them.
You know I'm joking, Em. Of course, it doesn't have to be actual class hours. These could be the hours the students are sitting down, watching, reading, listening. Mm. As Andy mentioned, read. These are hours that you can enjoy.
Yeah, you would just drop that number in and say, but it doesn't have to be classroom hours. It can. I just think it's really demotivating to say to somebody at the beginning of a course, you're going to have to do this for 600 hours.
I agree. But, you know, for some students, Em, I think they might take that challenge.
There's always Imagine someone, isn't there?
Having an app that had 600 or 750 hours.
Ticking down.
Each time you sat down and read a book for 8 hours, you just knock off another 8 hours. It's fabulous.
I don't think that would be very motivating for most people.
All right.
There's always one, but I would just say you want to learn it. You will learn it if you're enjoying it. And you will put those hours in. You don't have to think of it as like this time ticking away that you're going to have to put in. I'm not sure.
You're absolutely right. Anyway, this table I'm looking at also has category 2 languages. We've got German, Malay, Haitian, Creole, Indonesian. We've got category 3, which is a massive list of lots of languages. So these are becoming more and more difficult for English speakers. We've got Nepali, we've got Lao, we've got Icelandic, Hebrew, Farsi, Finnish. Category 4, M.
Ooh, I feel like the level's like going higher and higher.
The dial is turning, isn't it?
Yes.
Take 88 weeks.
88 weeks.
Which is approximately 2,200 class hours.
Wow.
They've got in quotes, super hard languages. Languages which are exceptionally difficult for native English speakers. These include Arabic, Japanese, Chinese, which is Cantonese and Mandarin, and Korean.
Right. So those would be with a whole new alphabet and pronunciation completely different.
You've got the tones and all of that stuff as well, some of those. Exactly. So those are real challenges.
Yeah, I think the word challenge is interesting. Yeah, you could see that list as a challenge. That's glass half full.
Wow.
Or you could see it as just an absolute deterrent, which would be glass half empty.
And remember, this is probably, we're talking proficiency level, so we don't need to get there. You just need to be able to communicate. You need to say, I'd like a cup of tea, please, or can I go to the airport, please?
Yeah, okay. I agree. I think you have to be realistic. You can't just say, hey, you're going to learn it. Don't even think about it. Don't worry. You don't have to try. But there's a balance, isn't there?
There is a balance. That's exactly what I was thinking while you were saying it. I had scales in my head.
Yeah.
They were challenge on one side. There were rewards on the other side. You've got to put that work in to get the benefits that you want.
100%.
Em, and on that metaphor, I'm going to draw the show to a close and say thank you very much for podding with me. Thank you for sharing your knowledge. Thank you to all the guests, Andy, Azren, and Em, and Gav. And this is bye from me.
Bye from me. And just remember, anyone can be a polyglot.
Thanks.